As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Friday, I'm in love. Wood hits the net as Wolves are sent packing. Mad about the boy from Brazil. Bruno pulls the strings in sparkling full home debut. And trust issues. The NUFC supporters trust sit down with the owners. Now they sit down with us. Yes, this is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne, and with me today, flying solo, it's the Athletic senior writer, Mr. George Culkin. And George, how you doing? How the devil are you, boy?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, Chris is locked in a room somewhere, so fortunately isn't able
for a change.
Isn't able to join us. Yeah, I'm good. I'm still buzzing from Friday night. Obviously, we'll talk about that massive result.
Yes.
Massive 3 points, and very good day off the pitch as well, with the supporters' trust meeting Amanda Staveley and Mirdad Gadusi. Very excited to be speaking to Alex from the Trust and True Faith a little bit later. And what about you? Has your hangover from Friday night finally subsided?
Barely subsided. I think every single person I knew who was going to the game was straight out after work on Friday night and ensured that they piled as much liquid into them as they could before kick-off. And you could tell when the game actually started. There was a few hangovers kicking in around half-time. But like we said, we'll get onto that in a little bit. You've been doing a bit of running again recently as well, haven't you? What happened there?
Yes. Well, so having done the Paris half marathon and the New York half marathon, the third of 10 this year, 10 or more this year, was running five times round a runway near York, and I can tell you it was
amazing.
Every bit as glamorous as it sounded. It was really hard.
Sounds...
It was really tough.
I'll be honest, I'm not massively keen on running anyway, but you could probably guess by looking at me. But you haven't exactly sold that to me as a hobby.
It's funny. It's funny just how, I mean, training, I'd train on my own. I enjoy that. I like it. But that sort of race day thing, it's amazing how having random strangers cheer you gives you a boost,
yeah.
Or having something to look at gives you a boost. And this was just running around the same runway. It was bizarre, but yeah, very tough. Very tough, that one.
Well, potential training methods for Eddie Howe for the future. you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months at the moment. An amazing offer. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and you get full access to all our great writing as well as ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now.
Come on, you Maggies.
Yeah.
right then, George. Friday night. Wow, what an occasion. A Friday night game, 8 o'clock kickoff. Wolverhampton Wanderers at St James's Park. And let's be honest, I don't think I've ever seen St James's Park as drunk as it was on Friday night. It was something to behold. The Leasers concourse was like the last days of Rome. It was ridiculous.
It was a fabulous start, wasn't it? It was that, I mean, pre-match, seeing the flags all around the stadium this time. War flags do such a brilliant job at St James's, but seeing all those flags, including being waved by Mehdad Gaddisi, which I'll mention. And there's something sort of quite poignant about that, because I wrote about Wolves away versus Wolves at home.
Yes.
And Wolves away, of course, was the last match of the Mike Ashley era, and I think in some ways the low point of this season, because it was just that game where the away end was flat, Newcastle lost, Steve Bruce said exactly the same as he'd said 12 months earlier, and I had loads of mates there. Alex was there, in fact, who we'll talk to in a bit. And, you know, people came away from that game just not feeling any kind of hope whatsoever that this was going to be the way the club was going to be, just going forward. Nothing changes, nothing happens. And really just that lack of any kind of energy, massive apathy. And then, of course, 4 days later, what happened? You know, the takeover happens. And so by the time Wolves at home comes around, it's not like the league table is heaven. But it's a good deal better than it was back then, and
absolutely,
just the whole atmosphere around the place. And so you've gone from this position. I spoke to Thomas Concannon, our friend, for this piece, because he was at Leicester away, and he said, Wolves away, and he said it was, you know, he said it was the lowest, the quietest car journey home that he can remember. And of course, Thomas is involved with War Flags. There was no War Flags in the stadium back then, at St James's back then. And of course they filled it filled it on Friday with one of the owners waving one of their flags. If you can't get much more of a symbolic scene than that, can you?
I mean, we've had three games in a row where we've lost, and Newcastle really needed a response, didn't they? And you know, it wasn't a vintage game, was it? And it wasn't an amazing performance by any stretch, but the 3 points are really all that matters at the moment, and the league table looks a lot healthier because of it.
Oh, it's massive. I mean, I've thought for a long time that Newcastle will be okay now, but you get those three games, you get those three defeats, very different types of defeat, but the Spurs one was so very, very bad that it does kind of make you question things a little bit. So
I thought the Spurs game was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of people who watched that and thought, oh shit, maybe we're not actually as coherent a team as we thought we were, and there is still some big problems there, you know? I think it was a massive shock to the system. Maybe it's given a few of them a kick up the arse that they needed to get their stuff together, you know?
Yeah, and I think internally at the club there was a little bit of concern. I mean, I asked Eddie Howe about that before the match, and he sort of said, no, it would be totally unacceptable if there'd been even sort of 1% slacking off within the dressing room. But I sort of think it's human nature in some ways that you have such a brilliant run that they had, that perhaps even if it's just one percentage point of intensity, but you know, in the Premier League you can come a cropper. I mean, I was a bit worried at half time, because it had been a stop start, it had been a very stop start opening to the match. I do think that meant that the atmosphere, as you said, maybe that was the hangover kicking in a little bit as well.
Which felt like it. I know mine did around about the 45th minute.
But I couldn't see Wolves being as bad as they had been in the first half and the second half.
No.
I mean, they're a good team. And I had a bit of a little conversation with someone on Twitter who was saying, I think this is Newcastle making them look bad. And I'm not sure. I mean, I think Newcastle have done that in the good run. Newcastle did do that a lot. I'm not sure about that on Friday. I just thought Wolves were really bad. But I do think in the second half, Newcastle did do that. It was just such a... I mean, they were worthy winners. They were, you know, not comfortable winners with that scoreline, but they deserved to win. And yeah, just an absolutely enormous 3 points. And, you know, you just can't see... You can't see enough teams overhauling Newcastle now. So, and I think the odds are something like 50-1 for Newcastle to get relegated now. So, I mean, I think that's a decent sign of where they are. So, yeah, huge result and huge relief.
I thought Wolves were disappointing as well on the night. I mean, obviously not disappointing from a Newcastle point of view, but from a Wolves point of view, they weren't anything like the team that I was expecting to turn up. And your man playing up front for them with the curly hair, the lead singer out the Strokes, he barely had a kick, did he? Do you know what I mean? He looked like he'd never considered the concept of football before, George. It was one of those performances where I thought, do you know what this is? Do you know why you're here? He just didn't look bothered. Is it Fabio Silva, I think his name is, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the football wasn't great, was it? But I have to say, that moment of quality in the first half, with that lovely sweeping move in Miguel Almiron, with the most audacious cheeky bastard back heel that I think I've ever seen in my life, and unfortunately into an offside position, and the goal is disallowed. But there was a little flash there, wasn't there, of what we were capable of?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, my concern was that maybe Newcastle just hadn't made the most of their dominance in the first half. It wasn't ever a sort of hugely convincing dominance, but because again, I just couldn't see Wolves being that sort of lifeless. And then, in fact, you know, for the first 5 minutes of the second half, they were pretty good, and it was like, oh no. But Newcastle lifted gears,
yes,
and that was so impressive. And by the end, everybody had sort of played well, and you know, we have to mention the Rolls Royce in the middle of the park, don't we? Making his home debut.
Oh, he was
his full debut.
He was fantastic, wasn't he? And I mean, I've been saying it for a little while now. Little flashes of what he can do and what he's capable of. And we've got some player on our hands there, mind. He is the real deal, isn't he? Bruno Guimarães. You know, and you're saying nobody really dominated, but he put his stamp on the game, and he was all over the pitch. He was absolutely on one, wasn't he? His full home debut as well, you know, but he looked like he'd been playing in that midfield for years. Some fantastic play from him. A comment from Robert F. in George's match day chat. He said, can we actually talk about Bruno now? Head and shoulders above anything in that centre midfield since Rob Lee and Gary Speed. Johan Cabaye might have a little nod in there as well, because I thought he was a very good footballer. But he's some names he's been compared to there. Rob Lee, Gary Speed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were both at
time yet, isn't it?
Yeah, they're two players I watched for years and years, as you did, Taylor. And you know, I love both of them.
Yeah,
you know, if he can get anywhere close to them, then Bruno will have had an absolutely amazing career at Newcastle, and hopefully Newcastle would have been very successful. I mean, it's very early to be making that kind of thing, you know, making that kind of comparison. We're all guilty of that kind of stuff. But I think the thing that excites me, and I've sort of said this for a while, is that, you know, he's the future. And I mean, at the moment, he's the present. So, you know, that's great. But what I mean by that is, can you imagine what it's going to be like when he has players of a similar caliber next to him?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not having a go at the players who are there now at all, because they've been very important, and I've got a lot of respect and affection for this team. Tough though they've often found it, but you know, this he has been brought to grow with the team and be part of this journey. You know, the journey he's talked about himself, about Newcastle becoming a world-class team that's capable of challenging things. That's the thing, you know, you just look at him on the pitch, yeah, and think, oh my God, you know, when there's a, you know, £40 million player beside him, when there's a £40 million defender behind him, when there's a striker who's guaranteed to get goals in front of him. And I don't want to wish away the seasons in front of us before Newcastle get to that point, but it's just very, very, very exciting. He is just class. He is absolute class from what we've seen so far.
He is, and I think you can see the players around him sort of lift themselves a little bit as well. I thought John Joe Shelvey did a good job on Friday night of spinning those balls in around the corner and looking a bit more like his old self. He'd struggled a little bit in the last couple of games, but I thought he did a great job at keeping their midfield occupied and trying to find those gaps. And obviously Ryan Fraser had to go off early on. Miguel Almiron, you know what he offers? He offers pace and he offers you know, determination, and he'll run all day for you and stuff like that. And Shelvey was trying to find him down the channels. We have to talk about Chris Wood, though. I mean, he's put his penalty away brilliantly. He's won the penalty himself. A fantastic flowing counter-attack as well to get it. I thought it was one of his better performances in black and white. I know he scored the goal, but all-round play, I thought he gave those Wolves defenders a lot to do on the night. And often player like that goes unnoticed, doesn't it? Because it's not particularly glamorous, and it's not headline grabbing, but it is really important to the team, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were fielding questions about whether he deserved to keep his place in the team. I mean, I didn't kind of ever think that he was going to get dropped for Dwight Gayle, in spite of Eddie Howe's sort of nice words about Dwight Gayle. He's just not, you know, just hasn't figured. But there were questions around him. And yeah, I thought he answered those. I mean, I thought the whole team did. But I thought he answered those questions very well. He was involved. He did make life difficult for the Wolves' defence. And he took the penalty brilliantly. It was a difficult, you know, those moments are so difficult now. We have so many delays in the game. Because of VAR and so on and so forth, that everything gets looked at. I think it puts sort of more pressure. But he took the goal. He took the penalty really, really coolly. Delighted for him. I think he's very popular within the dressing room, and you know, a vitally important goal.
Absolutely. And Alan St. Maximin, George. I mean, it's this question, isn't it? He's not been setting the world alight recently. Chris has been writing about him again for The Athletic recently, and he did slightly miss fire on the night so much, but you know, he was heavily involved in the move that led to the penalty, that led to the goal, obviously. And you know, he showed little flashes here and there, and there was moments when maybe his decision making wasn't the best. What did you think about him?
Well, I mean, I agree with what Chris wrote. I don't think he's in good form. I mean, I don't think he's in his best form by a long shot.
I'll be honest, I still don't think he looks fully fit.
No, I don't think he looks fully fit. But what was really impressive about what he did on Friday night was that he looked really determined to work his way through that. I thought he put a shift in. I know that's, you know, that's a massive cliche, but it's not something that he's always done. I think he worked very hard, and you know, that was needed. And yeah, he tried to do what he can do. There were some moments where it sort of it didn't come off. There were some moments where it looked closer to working. But I just liked his attitude. It did look much more in keeping with the attitude of the team.
Do you think that's,
you know, and the way?
Sorry to jump in, George, but do you think that's anything to do with it being a home game and the crowd being up and kind of feeling like he has to prove something to the fans?
Well, maybe.
Or do you think it's just, he's just thought,
he's a big-time player, he wants to be the star of the show, you know, that's his role in the team. You know, we love him for it. He is the difference maker. He is the one that can get people off their seats. He loves that. He wants to be the star. And I don't know, he's seen players come in January, not necessarily glamorous signings, but Bruno has certainly come in, and you know, it's his name that people are chanting. And I'm not saying he's had his nose put out of joint or anything like that, but the team has shown that it can kind of get results without him. And so the stage was sort of is more set for him at home, you know. And again, yeah, we must remember, put into the context, that 6 of the previous 7 games had been away from home, and that's a tough old run for anybody.
Absolutely.
Let alone a team that has been struggling near the bottom of the table, and they've come through it, and overall, you know, they've come through that very, very well. So, yeah, hopefully he can carry on in that vein and get back some of his better form. I mean, you would hope that with the pressure off a little bit, that, you know, there's a chance for him to do that in the next couple of home games. Why not?
Just before we wrap this little bit up as well, I have to say we need some honourable mentions here, because I thought there was a couple of players who had really good games and maybe flew under the radar slightly. I thought Emil Kraft played very well, and I thought it was maybe one of his best performances in a black and white shirt. I thought he looked really good, really solid at right back. I thought the lads at the back as well. I thought Dan Byrne, he's had a tough couple of weeks. You know, he's been, maybe you could say he's been at fault for a few of those goals. And him and Fabian Scher looked great together again. It looked like that partnership was back and firing on all cylinders. Anybody you want to mention in particular? I mean, Martin Dubravka, I have to say as well, he didn't have an awful lot to do in that first half. I think he touched the ball twice, and then he had to make a fantastic save in that second half as well from Silva. And, you know, he did what he needed to do when it was required. So you've got to say well done to him as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, Kraft isn't ever going to be a favourite, but I think he's done very, very well in recent weeks. I think he's been, you know, he's become a very solid member of the squad and the team when he plays. Almiron comes on, it's difficult to kind of come on and, you know, early like that. And again, I like the energy that he shows. It's been a tough spell for him, and he did very well. But no, I agree with you. I mean, I think everybody comes out of Friday night with, you know, with good marks.
Fantastic stuff. A little fun stat from Opta's Duncan Alexander just before we go as well. Listen to this, George. This is great. Newcastle United between January the 1st and April the 8th. In 1996, 22 points from 13 games. And in 2022, 23 points from 12 games. Not bad.
It's not
bad.
But
we all know how well 1996 worked out, don't we?
Well, it's a slightly double-edged compliment, Matt, because you can argue that the first half of 1996 is the biggest fuck-up in Newcastle's recent
history.
Well, that's
like you fucked the league up. Yeah. You're as good as that. Well done.
They were a very, very good team at that point. I mean, a brilliant team. The best I've seen. But yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a massive, happy memory, that, because I think that spell does include the 4-3 at Liverpool and the 2-1 at Blackburn.
Absolutely. Well, everybody loves a start though, don't they? Anyway, we'll be back in just a second with Alex Hurst. See you in a bit.
I tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right then, it gives me great pleasure to say hello once again to Alex Hurst of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, who joins us live from the True Faith podcast studio. It's apparently chummy four rivalries are all the rage in football these days, so we have to mention that. And he's had quite a weekend hobnobbing with the football and elites, and he's now here slumming it with myself and George. Alex, how the devil are you, mate? Are you good? It's good to see you.
I'm really good, thanks, Taylor. It's great to be here on the number one Newcastle United podcast. And looking forward to chatting to you both about all Correct. Things positive.
Yeah, come on. We should mention Friday night first. I mean, what a massive night that was for the team and for the club. What do you feel about that? How do you enjoy it?
Enjoyed it tremendously, George. It's weird, isn't it? It's like they're no longer football matches, they're events. You know, and I mean that in the best possible way, that I just think that those Wolves players walking out into that kind of atmosphere, like everyone's in their seat at kickoff. It's not like it used to be, like everyone knows these days because of the flags and because of the team, because of anyhow, to get to the ground kind of 10 minutes early. And Wolves players walk out and there's flags on all four sides of the ground. The atmosphere is absolutely class. And they're like, you know, like I just can't see a situation where Wolves win that game. Forget about the football or the players or any of that stuff. Just the whole, you know, kind of atmosphere and the whole kind of nature of the occasion, Friday night in Newcastle. I just thought, but there's just no way we're going to lose this game. And I was right.
And you were, I mean, I mentioned Wolves away a little earlier before you joined us, and just the contrast with Wolves at home. Can I just take you back to that night 6 months earlier than the game before the takeover, just to remind us all about how shitting awful it was?
If you must. But it's worth saying, isn't it? Because this isn't hyperbole, and it makes for a nice story, doesn't it? But there's so many people who follow Newcastle United away from home regularly who are all having the same conversation that night and the next day. I remember driving back on the motorway the next day, speaking to some friends, just thinking, what am I doing with my life? Why have I done this to myself? And everyone, we're all used to watching Newcastle United get beat. It's not new for any of us, however long you've been supporting the club. But there was just a kind of, like, you know, it felt like, you know, the manager at the time is not going to get sacked. He's come out again and said we've played well, when everyone in the ground and everyone who watched it knew we didn't play well, knew we were deservedly beaten. And it was just one of the lowest points ever, because there are very few times I've ever felt I'm wasting my time supporting this club in this nature. And that was one of them. And like you say, the kind of the contrast to Friday night, in my opinion, the whole of the United Kingdom, I'd include Celtic Park and and Glasgow Rangers in this. There isn't a better place to watch football at the minute than at St James's Park in terms of atmosphere, in terms of ceremony. And that in itself, if you forget about the transformation of the pitch, that in itself is an extraordinary turnaround that I'm grateful to have witnessed.
Absolutely. I mean, a week later after that game, the takeover went through and it's breathed new life into the club, hasn't it? And you've recently been speaking with Amanda Staveley and Mia Dedgadusi. Was it a constructive conversation that you had and how did that come about?
It was a really constructive conversation and I have to give credit to those two people, to the owners and to Lee Marshall at the club, who was the supporter, the liaison officer, as well as other things, for putting that meeting together. You know, we're very passionate at the Trust about structured supporter engagement. It doesn't sound particularly sexy, but it's important that there is a genuine way for supporters to communicate with the people who run the club. And it was great to hear in that meeting that you know, Merdad and Amanda are really passionate about as well. I think it's fair to say that they have been really open about their passion about the supporters and about the fact that the club belongs to the supporters in their eyes. And they kind of repeated that. And, you know, even before kind of how the meeting went, we're already a million miles ahead of the previous regime, just that the meeting was taking place. And you know, they're incredibly busy. I mean, everyone who runs a football club is busy, but they're incredibly busy trying to unpack the mess that is Newcastle United, that was Newcastle United. So to find time for myself, Greg, who's the chair, and Thomas, who's the vice chair, to find time for us to spend a significant amount of time with us on a match day, tremendously grateful for that, and it bodes really well for the future.
We'll kind of come on to ask you about what you sort of talked about, but I just wanted to say, I mean, I just think that makes Friday such an important moment for the football club. I mean, yes, what happened at St James's later on that night, because that was, you know, arguably that's the game that sort of, you know, may keep Newcastle in the division, which is obviously massively important. But, you know, it sounds like sort of such an obvious thing, a club and a club's owners meeting its own fans. We know that Amanda and Merdad have kind of met people socially and they've, you know, done loads and loads and loads of selfies. But the Supporters Trust is a democratically elected body. It represents all fans. And to have that coming together of club fans is just really, really symbolically very, very important, isn't it, Alex?
Oh yeah, massively important. And if we're all on the same page at this football club, we're unstoppable. I think they know that. You know, sorry to keep harping on about St James's Park and the atmosphere, but what you see there is a football club where everyone wants the same thing, and it shouldn't be too much for supporters to ask for. And through the Trust, like you say, we you know, football fans can be difficult at times. I can be difficult. I'm a difficult football fan. We all think we know more about the game than the manager and the owners. But what we want to do at the Trust is just provide some serious, genuine feedback from our membership on key issues that involve football supporters. So we can't go in there and tell them who to sign or what they should do, you know, if Newcastle are 2-1 down at home with 10 minutes to go. But we can go in and talk to them about ticketing issues, about accessibility issues, about match day experience. And we're lucky that we'll have a big membership at the Trust. We'd like a bigger membership. We'd love every Newcastle United supporter to pay their pound and have a voice within the Trust and be able to have that kind of relationship with the club that makes sure that fans are at the heart of the decision-making process, particularly on issues that directly relate to fans.
Alex, with looking ahead to the future and stuff, how are the Trust going to develop that relationship with the club? Is there any plans in place for going forward? And obviously it depends on the club as well, and it's got to go both ways. But what is the view going forward into the future?
Well, we've given them a bit of time up till this point because we knew that when they got into the football club that there was a lot to do. And obviously staying in the Premier League is absolutely everyone's main focus, and they deserve tremendous credit for what they've done so far. So we're really grateful that they gave, you know, they've come to the table with us. I think we're going to let them get the season out of the way. The summer, it will be a massive summer for Newcastle United on and off the pitch, and we would love to develop that formal structured engagement document where everyone knows where they stand, all fans, whether it's at the Trust or other fans group who speaks to them. We would love to get that document in place and also work with them to produce that document so that every single fan of Newcastle United can go on the club website and think, okay, how do I speak to my football club? And then everyone knows where to stand. I think that's really, really important. And the point I made to them is that if you look at it, there's so much at Newcastle United that we do, I think, that is better than all other 19 Premier League clubs in terms of atmosphere, away support, position in the city, flags, home games. Let's make structured dialogue, another one of those things that we do better than all of the other clubs. So whatever they think other clubs do well, let's go one step further than that at least. And they were really receptive to that idea. And you guys, you know, particularly through, you know, the stuff you've recorded with them, George, in your articles, that's the language they speak about, making Newcastle United one of the biggest football clubs in the world. Well, for me, structured dialogue has to be an essential part of that. And I'm very confident, but it's over to those guys. But I'm very confident they'll do it.
So, I mean, I exchanged messages with her after with Amanda after the match, and she sort of said about, she talked about how proud she was to sit with the fans last night, one family, one shared love of this great club. And she also said she wanted to get across just how much she enjoyed meeting the trust, and how important that what felt. So, I mean, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm so encouraged by that. What was your biggest takeaway from the meeting, Alex?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have to say that me and the lads are tremendous company, so I'm not surprised you really enjoyed it. That's a joke.
No, I can vouch for that.
We enjoyed their company very much, so the other people in the room. But yeah, I think our main takeaway from it, that this is real, that this is going to happen, you know, we're kind of old hands at this in terms of trying to get this football club to speak to its supporters. And we've often been told things that didn't happen and they knew it wouldn't happen. So in 2019, I got told that Mike Ashley at the end of the season was going to take me and some others for a drink, talk about the fan club relationship. Now, the pandemic happened, but you know, even if the pandemic hadn't happened, that simply would not have happened. My biggest takeaway is I trust these guys to be good to their words and to follow through on their promises. And I genuinely believe them when they say they think fans are important to this football club. It's not just a cliche. They get Newcastle, a bit like the manager, they get Newcastle United and they get what football fans feel, and how to use us to make the football club better is something that's in their remit, and I'm confident they're going to do it. So the most important thing for me is I trust them. I think they're going to do what they say they're going to do.
Alex, do you have to keep pinching yourself when you think about where the club was a year ago and where we are now? I mean, it boggles my mind that these conversations are taking place and that we're talking about these things and that you're sitting down with the owners and stuff like that. It's absolutely amazing and it's a breath of fresh air. But I think about where we were a year ago and sort of what we were dealing with and you know, the brick wall that was Mike Ashley. It must just blow your mind that we've come so far in such a short space of time.
No, very, very much so. It just, like George referenced before, that Wolves game was, what, October, and we're only at the start of April. So the turnaround, but you know what it is? It's such validation, isn't it, for all of us? Because we always knew it could be like this. We always knew that the negativity and the, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, we knew that this football club run properly and run with some ambition would turn into this. So it's not a surprise, and while I do pinch myself, I'm just so grateful, like, for, you know, that we've been lucky enough to kind of witness this and live through it and enjoy it. And everyone's just happier, you know, even away from the football, people can't wait for the games. Town was bouncing on Friday. We were there. I was in town quite early, and there was, you know, I think we got to town at 11 o'clock, and there was already people in bars and stuff like that. You know, it's just a fantastic, it's one of the best times, I think, supporting the football club in my 15th.
Absolutely. And you also took part in the fan panel, round two of the fan panel with Sky's Jamie Carragher as well, didn't you? Slightly different tone this time round than there was the last time.
Yeah, it was great. Again, Gary Neville didn't fancy it this time, don't know why, but ultimately, I also gave an answer, I think, about Steve Bruce, which got cut, but never mind. It was good to do. And it's not, again, it's just that little bit of change, I think, since the Super League stuff, where Sky, anyway, and other big broadcasters like them have realised that actually football fans should both be able to have a bit of a say about their football club, if you're going to talk about their football club lots. And also that not every football fan talks rubbish, because, you know, I don't think people like that or some of them had any respect for fan views. But yeah, it was nice. It's nice that Sky want to platform fans and help their coverage, you know, inform their coverage of what fans are thinking. But, you know, just like this conversation now, it's been a lovely conversation and talking about positive things. It was the same with Jamie Carragher on Friday. He's a lovely bloke on and off air.
I must express huge admiration for Alex. I mean, I do have huge admiration for Alex, as I hope he knows, but you know, not only does he have a 9-to-5 job, which I'm sure is a lot more than that, not only does he do incredible work for the Trust, and of course at True Faith. You've just had a new addition to the family, Alex, haven't you? So I'd like to say congratulations to you.
Congratulations.
But are you getting time to sleep at all these days?
Oh, thanks very much for that, mate. Very kind words. Mate, I get loads of sleep. It's me wife who doesn't, so you should be... I'll direct your sympathies to her. I'm flying.
good stuff.
Great. Well, I also make no apologies for directing people to the Trust. You know, it's a vital organisation. A healthy supporters trust means a healthy Newcastle United. And the fact that the Trust have now formally met the co-owners of the club, I think is brilliant and very, very important. There have been, you know, unofficial conversations since day one and before, but just to do that in person and to kind of lay out a roadmap for what comes next is brilliant. So Newcastle United fans, listen to the podcast who haven't yet signed up, please consider going to nufctrust.co.uk. That's nufctrust.co.uk. signing up for a quid, you'll find out a lot more about the Trust there. If you want to be involved, you can stand to be a member of the board. It's all very, very democratic, but please consider doing so. It's really important.
Absolutely. Alex, thanks so much for coming on, mate. I know you're really, really busy, and obviously energy levels may not be at their peak at the moment, what with the new bouncing baby in your life as well. But thanks so much. We always appreciate when you come on and talk with us. And good luck for the future with the Trust as well. And good luck for everything you do with True Faith as well.
Thanks, Taylor, mate. Cheers, George.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Right then, George, just enough time to wrap things up before we finish. A fascinating conversation with Alex, that though, wasn't it? And great that he's gotten the chance to sit down with the owners. Mad, absolutely mad that this stuff is actually happening to us now.
Yeah, just logical, normal, rational stuff. I mean, how bizarre is it?
Stuff that happens to football clubs.
The team winning matches every now and again. The owners talking to fans, just having a kind of conversation. Yeah, I mean, It sort of joins the list of having the Gallagate windows washed, doesn't it? And things like that. But it's great. It's what a proper connected football club does and should do. But the fact it's happening,
absolutely.
You know, the fact it's happening still feels strange. You know, it is still like I mention it every week, but I can't get over the fact that you go to St James's now and everybody wants the same thing. And
absolutely,
you know, that is just so very precious.
It absolutely is. And this fully joined up coherent football club have Leicester and then Crystal Palace at home and then Norwich away. Do you think there's a chance maybe, George, that we could be safe before that nasty little run of Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal? There's points there for the taking.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I said earlier that, you know, I think you can get odds of 50 to 1 of, you know, for Newcastle going down now. So I just think that what happens next is an opportunity. You know, Wolves were a very good team when they came to St James's and they were made to look bang average. There's a chance to do the same thing with Leicester and Palace who are having a very good season.
They do play some good football. Palace, mind you. Yeah, has got them playing really good football.
But you know, that's another night game. That's another midweek game. That'll be electric. And Leicester at the weekend. Yeah, it's an opportunity, isn't it? I hope that having sort of got that win under their belts, that there's now an opportunity to sort of play without pressure, to enjoy it again. Norwich, as you say. I mean, and then, you know, after that, it's Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal. And, you know, at this stage, that end of season game, Burnley-Newcastle, which I'm sure has been in our heads for sort of all the wrong reasons, you know, you would like to think that Newcastle's fate has long been determined by then. But I hope that these are games to sort of enjoy and relish at this point.
Yeah. I've been to that Norwich away game a few times over the years, and I have to say, it's the most difficult place in the world to get to. I think you can get to anywhere in the British Isles quicker and easier and with less hassle than Norwich on a Saturday. You could get the Outer Hebrides easier than you can get to Norwich. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know that very well because my dad used to live in Norwich, so he lived there for about 20 years, so I used to have to go there for my school holidays. I went to Carrow Road. I used to go to Carrow Road quite often during holidays, usually to see Newcastle, usually to see them draw 1-1.
I've never seen us win. I've never seen us win at Carrow Road.
No.
Not once.
No, I don't think I have.
And it doesn't matter what time of year or what day you come home from Norwich City away, there's always a bus replacement service on between Peterborough and Norwich every single time without fail.
Yeah, it's like Stowmarket or Ely or it's places like that. And even if there isn't a bus, the train just lasts forever, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Right then, let's be honest, George, we've done quite well to make it this far, haven't we? After the live room fiasco of Friday, I have to bring it up. We can't not mention this.
We've been so pleasant to each other, Taylor.
Listen, I know, it's nice when we do these little podcasts where it's just the two of us because there's no third wheel to take the piss out of. But, George, you have hammered Chris for his technological incompetence over the years, so it's only right that we do the same to you. And you're lucky that you've only got me here doing it and not Chris as well. But come on, Friday, that went sideways so quick. I don't think I've ever seen anything go sideways as quick as that.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody... I don't think there were many people listening to the first version of our live room, which I joined to find you in the room. And having spent all day posting links on Twitter, I then pressed start the conversation, which I thought was going to allow me to speak to you. I sent out push notifications to the entire Athletic site and app. I saw it come up on my phone screen, shouted, "Oh shit," at the top of my voice, and then ended it.
You did.
Which meant that then our sort
which
of...
destroyed the link.
Which destroyed the link and broke the internet. And so our tech people at the Athletic had to then repopulate. Anyway, I got through that. It did take a week off my life. I was like sitting here sweating. But then I did enjoy it afterwards. I think we had a few sound problems as well. But anyway, thank you to everybody. You did join us live.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do apologise. And hopefully the next time will be a bit better. But yeah, I've learnt my lesson. Don't press any buttons ever.
And if someone asks you to press a button, make sure you know what it does before you press it, George.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I thought the live room was great, and apparently we spoke two or four over 700 people across that little hour, so not bad at all. And I think it might even be more than that. Actually, I might have just been made that number up off the top of my head. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It was great, and we'll do it again at some point if somebody from the Athletic allows us to.
Yeah, well, I think that might be the big one with that. Taylor,
you don't get to press the buttons this time, George. Okay,
no.
You don't.
No.
Somebody else has to do it. Should it be Chris?
Chris couldn't even get it.
Shouldn't be Chris either, should it?
Well, so Chris has the opposite problems. If he presses buttons inside a toilet, he then can't get out of the toilet. So I'm not sure. But if he didn't press any buttons at all, he would just be weeing in front of the entire train. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to this.
Amazing.
We might have to just...
So just to be clear here, the only person who's allowed to press buttons in the Athletic live room is me, a person who doesn't work for the Athletic.
Yeah, we're going to have to... We might have to bring in a professional.
I think we might have to. Anyway, fantastic stuff. Right, George, thanks very much. We're going to wrap things up there. It's been great talking to Alex, and it's been great chatting about that Wolves game as well. We'll be back next week, dear listener, and I hope you can join us yet again. Don't forget, at the moment, our special offer. You can get a subscription to The Athletic with your first 6 months at just £1 a month at theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. I'm going to go and lie down in a dark room. George, anything nice on the horizon for you this week? Any particular things that you're writing about or anything you want to plug?
So Chris has got a piece coming out this week about Dwight Gayle. Ooh. Which is kind of quite interesting because he always gets spoken about very highly by Eddie Howe, how much he enjoys working with him, but of course he just doesn't appear. So that's good. I'll be writing something about Newcastle later this week, to be confirmed. Mm. The piece about Wolves is still up for people to have a look at, and I will be at the Leicester game this weekend, looking forward to it. Yeah, Chris is having a few days off, so we do always take the mick out of each other. But Chris, we miss you and look forward to having you back. Hope you're having a good break. You've done some amazing work this year.
Absolutely. And if you would like to read some of Chris's amazing work, check out that special offer at theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. Look after yourselves. If you are in the first week of your Easter holidays and you've got kids off school, best of luck and enjoy your week off. From everyone at Pod on the Tyne, thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.